When political season rolls around, the candidates have to stand for election. They stand before you so you can find out who they are, and they stand on their positions on issues. They stand with their party. Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel. Today begins your opportunity to talk with a candidate standing for statewide office. Call statewide for Senate candidate Mead Treadwell, toll-free, 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK, a local call in Anchorage at 550-8422, email talk@alaskapublic.org. We have the first of three to choose from on the August Republican primary ballot today on Talk of Alaska statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating jobs and business opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. And by First National Bank Alaska, helping Alaska's business dreams grow for more than 90 years. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
When last we had Mead Treadwell on this program, he was running for lieutenant governor. He succeeded in that and now is going for U.S. Senate. Mead, welcome back to Talk of Alaska.
It's great to see you, Steve.
How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. It's been a fun campaign. You asked me when I came in, is it all that I signed up for? And I'll say yes and more. It's been a lot of fun.
I'm sure it's exhausting and demanding physically. And also in terms of how you imagine and position yourself. So to start with, I guess I'll just ask the real softball question, which is why does somebody like you choose to want to be a U.S. senator?
Well, Steve, I came to Alaska 40 years ago last month, and I had the chance to work with some of our statehood founders, Governor Hickel, Governor Egan, Governor Hammond, ultimately, and I know that what they wanted for us was self-determination, and I don't see us getting it now from the federal government. And then I also see a lot of frustration around the state about federal overreach and a federal government that taxes too much and spends too much and borrows too much and snoops too much and meddles too much, and it's time to actually send somebody to Washington who is very, very serious about steering the direction differently. So I have put my name forward to go. I go with about, with the 40 years that I've spent working on Alaskan issues, a broad experience throughout the state, from the Arctic, southwest coast of Alaska, the coastal communities where I worked during the oil spill, southeast where I've lived twice, and seeing the effects of the roadless rule is one example. And I think it's time to actually send somebody to represent Alaska who knows Alaska.
I guess if Dan Sullivan were here, I would think of him as Dan Sullivan, the attorney.
Sure.
And Joe Miller, I think of Joe Miller as the vet who put himself through grad college and became a lawyer. And Mead Treadwell, the what? The dedicated public servant, the entrepreneur. Who are you, anyway?
Three things. First and foremost, I might have been in politics earlier, but my wife, Carol, died in 2002. She left me a kindergartner, a first grader, a fourth grader, and a minivan. And that minivan had to go to volleyball practice and to the ski hill and to Boy Scouts. And I'm proud of my two Eagle Scouts and my daughter, who's a varsity volleyball player now. And I'm first and foremost a guy who's lived in the real world. My wife died of cancer. So when you get into healthcare debates, I have been there very deeply. And we've worked very hard to improve Alaska's capacity to fight diseases. My mom is reliant on Social Security, and my two brothers and I try to help her, but I understand what it's like there. So one is a real-world guy who has a family and has put family first. The second is I am the only guy in the race who has a substantial background in business, and I've helped start a number of technology companies. I helped Governor Hickel and Governor Egan start Yukon Pacific, the natural gas pipeline venture. I started a company with some others called Immersive Media that was the pioneer of Street View for Google. Another company I helped start with others was Digimarc, which is listed on the NASDAQ stock exchange, and it watermarks most of the money print in the world, and who knows, you may be using it right now to watermark this broadcast so that you can find it later, find things out later. It's used all over the world.
Do you think Alaska has a technology future?
I definitely think Alaska has a technology future. And one of the things that we've been doing this year, Steve, is to look at our technology past. I mean, this is a place where sunglasses were invented. The kayak was invented. Fish traps were invented. Container shipping had its first use in broad use. Alaska has very much had a knowledge-based economy for its entire history.
Just to continue the softball questions here, Alaska is the only Arctic state in the United States. Sometimes the Congress doesn't seem to realize this. Sometimes the administration doesn't realize this. Pentagon realizes it. The other countries, the other Arctic countries realize it. And yet, you know, we've got undue clout, really, for a state of our population size, because we have two U.S. senators, but we only have one person in the U.S. House, and we have most of the nation's coast. What would you do as a U.S. senator to start to forward the notion of the only Arctic state? Because it seems to me that hasn't really gained a lot of traction in D.C.
Well, Steve, I've tried to do this both as before I was lieutenant governor, I was chair of the U.S. Arctic Research Commission, which oversaw about $400 million a year of research in the Arctic. I worked to get the White House to put together the first Arctic policy in 15 years. And there's been you've had a number of programs on Arctic policy recently. And that was my job to get that started. We are also coming up on the 150th anniversary of the Alaska Purchase or the Alaska Transfer. And the old Seward's Folly argument still flies with Alaska. And I, as a U.S. senator, will be helping to convince America that Alaska is worth it. We're worth it for the energy we produce. We're worth it for the culture of the people who live here. We're worth it for the food security of the people who live here. We're worth it for what we provide to the nation. Last year, the Washington Post did a funny story which said, why don't we sell Alaska back to Russia to help balance the budget or, you know, reduce the debt? And I said, well, if you're selling, guys, I'm buying. And the currency that we would offer here is based on oil, gas, precious minerals, fur-bearing critters, and strategic flyover rights, and great military bases, and, and our newest export reality TV shows. And my point is this, is that Alaska is worth it to the nation. We provide a huge amount of protein, a huge amount of security. We're a major part of the global transportation system. The United States needs to respect Alaska's needs, but also understand how it will help in geopolitical situations. The situation that we have in the Arctic right now, I commend to you an article that Vladimir Putin gave a talk to the Russian Security Council April 22nd, where he said it's his goal to, by and large, control shipping in the Arctic. Well, that should not be America's goal. It should not be our goal in Alaska to let Russia control so much of what could be the world's energy transportation system. We have to be as active in this neighborhood as everyone else.
Well, now you're being accused of cheerleading for Vladimir Putin.
There was one blogger, and how it made it to the Daily News today, I don't know. But, one blogger was kind of upset that there were a number of pro-Russian speakers at a U.S.-Russia conference I spoke to a week or so ago. And, you know, my point is this. We have been surprised as a nation. Certainly this administration has. We gave Russia the chance to do the reset button. And in Eastern Europe, I had been there helping to promote missile defense because we in Alaska had done that. And we let Russia have the veto there. What's happening in Iraq today is happening with the help of Syria. And I think Russia could have been much more helpful in keeping Syria, in a rational state than they have been. We are being challenged by Putin in the Arctic. And I went to make that point, not to be his lapdog by any stretch of imagination, simply to say, if you feel you've been surprised so far, take a look at what he's doing to control shipping lanes. And the other point I made, which is very important for Alaskans, is we have a permanent neighborly agenda with Russia in the same way you might with your neighbors over the fence. we fish from the same waters. And, you know, right now we've got, you know, the front page of the Daily News today is about the challenge of Kuskokwim Chinook. We want to see kings back in our rivers. Well, the Russians' official line has been that they have zero bycatch. I don't believe it. And we're trying to get them to be much more forward on sharing data so that we can figure out what's happening to the salmon in our streams. They brought 60 ships through the Bering Strait last year, they and others. Most of them were carrying hydrocarbons, hydrocarbon cargoes. And there is no oil spill plan between our countries. And here I am, a pro-development lieutenant governor, thumping on the Obama administration because they're not addressing the food security concerns of our Western Alaska residents. And so, yes, do we have to, you know, be mindful of the fact that we're neighbors with Russia and at the same time despise what they're doing on a geopolitical scene? Absolutely. And that's what I said.
Okay, you ready for some questions here, Mead? Mead Treadwell is our guest. Talk of Alaska. The telephone number is 1-800-478-8255 statewide. If you're in Anchorage, you can just dial the local number 550-8422, or you could email at talkatalaskapublic.org, and they will probably stack up pretty fast. Let's go first with Patricia in Anchorage. Welcome to Talk of Alaska with Mead Treadwell, Patricia.
Hi, thank you. I just had a quick question about the native voting, the native language voting materials. And I'm wondering, in the Daily News article that was written, it says that this is a pretty old problem. And I'm just wondering how it's gotten this far without being solved. I mean, as Lieutenant Governor, it was your job to know how all your divisions and departments run, and it doesn't look like this was really dealt with at all. So is this just prolonging discrimination against Alaska Natives or just a lack of caring or knowledge, or what happened there?
Hey, Patricia, the trial's not over. And in fact, today a new set of witnesses come to the stand. And I just want to say, first and foremost, this is a matter in litigation, so there's a lot that I can say and that I can't say. But the litigation, in my mind, is about a difference in what the law requires. The state had settled with the same plaintiffs where these other issues hadn't come up. The plaintiffs who sued us never came to talk to us ahead of time on this, and I know that we are doing a number of things that they've sued us to say we ought to be doing. We are already doing it. We provide translations many different points in the state. I'm quite sensitive to language issues as chair of the Arctic Commission and as chair of the Alaska Historical Commission. I worked very hard to get language preservation forward in the Alaska agenda, and we created a language preservation commission. The other thing I'll tell you is that in terms of getting early voting to happen all over the state, we've done a number of things to increase the number of early voting stations, and we've done an online delivery of ballots to make sure that that's available. So I will do what the law requires, and there's been a bit of a difference on what the interpretation of the law is, and I believe that's why we have courts, and there's absolutely no interest on our part in denying anybody the right to vote or the explanation to vote. And we did the surveys that we thought were required, and we believed we were following the law and doing more than the law required. And we'll see what the judges say.
Patricia?
Well, all right. Thanks for your answer.
Thank you.
All right. 1-800-478-8255. And now Larry joins the program from Anchorage. Larry, you're on the air with Mead Treadwell.
Good morning, Governor. you started out talking about the Arctic and your experience working on Arctic issues. Why should Alaskans care about what's going on in the Arctic these days? What are the challenges and the opportunities? And as a United States Senator, what will you try to do in the Senate to awaken the nation to what's going on there?
I think I already asked that question, Larry.
Well, I didn't hear.
You just want to have him go on more about it, you know. I think we'll go on to some other.
Well, specifics about the challenges.
Steve,
a couple of sentences. Let me just say this. You know, most of Alaska's economy, in fact, a part of what's keeping the lights on here at the radio station around the state, is oil developed in the Arctic. And that's very, very important to our economy. We have the largest lead zinc mine in the world. You know that 47,000 Alaskans work in aviation, and that's because in part of polar aviation, where we supply services to the world's air cargo industry, and and we're the fifth largest airport here in Anchorage in the world in terms of air cargo. So those are things that supply where the Arctic supplies our economy today. Tomorrow, there's a very good chance that shipping and more energy development will also supply that, and we also get a huge amount of employment from fisheries. So paying attention to policy in this neighborhood is incredibly important for the future of Alaskans. As your U.S. senator, in the same way I have as your lieutenant governor, I will be first and foremost for the opportunities that we're talking about, but also for respect for food security. I mean, when you go to Western Alaska, perhaps as much as 75% of what people eat may be a beluga whale they've taken, or it may be a bowhead they've taken, or it may be fish they've caught, or it may be food they've gathered. And the point is this, is that we have to make sure that as new shipping comes to this ocean, that we protect the safety of Alaskans and the safety of their food security. And so I've been working very hard on those issues. I believe the Arctic is key to our economy. I believe the Arctic is key to sustaining our traditional economy and traditional subsistence. And that's why I've pushed very hard to make sure that America has an Arctic policy that pays attention.
All right, Larry.
Well, in the Senate, how about the Law of the Sea Treaty, which is central, managing the Arctic on an international basis?
Well, under Law of the Sea, there's about four things that I believe Alaskans have fought for that is positive. One is that we get the 200-mile limit, and the 200-mile limit has meant all the difference in the world for the 50,000 Alaskans who work in our fisheries community. Before that happened, we had hundreds of foreign trawlers coming up to our shores. We also have the idea of freedom of navigation. We have the idea of collecting more territory outside our 200-mile limit that we'll be able to do. But I'll tell you this, Larry, Law of the Sea's got a big problem on a national issue. I've talked to opponents and proponents of Law of the Sea, and they support what we want in the Arctic. But the challenge is that it also creates this international seabed authority that has us for the first time paying taxes to kind of a global government unit, and that doesn't sit well with many Americans, nor with me. So I think we've got to work very hard to fix Law of the Sea, even as we work hard to make our claims and to make sure that we've got the protections that it offers us here in the Arctic.
Thank you very much.
So if I'm reading you right, you would not be among those in the Senate pressing for ratification of the treaty has already been signed?
You know, Steve, what I've done is I've tried to bring opponents and proponents together to find solutions on this, because there are some things that we need in that treaty, and there's some things the treaty's missing. One big concern I've got about the treaty, besides the tax issue that I just mentioned, is, Russia's going to get 45% of the Arctic Ocean bottom. And right now, we have freedom to go do research in that ocean, and we may not after their claims. And the treaty did nothing to protect our rights to research, as an example. So I believe we're at a stalemate on Law of the Sea right now in the United States, and it's time to push for a discussion of how to get what we really need there. An up or down vote on ratification, in my mind, is not what's going to happen.
Very interesting. Let's go to Thomas, joins the program from Anchorage. Welcome to Talk of Alaska. Thomas, you're on the air with Mead Treadwell.
Thank you. My question is I keep hearing this term of federal overreach as far as the state of Alaska is concerned. Having been here all my life, I don't get the issue of people saying this, because without the federal dollars for Alaska, we wouldn't have it. I mean, that's what got us through all of this stuff. Now they're talking about, backing the federal government out. To me, people are not realizing what would be lost without those federal dollars. This economy is based on that. So where are we going with this federal overreach?
Well, thank you. And when you run for the Senate, I know that you may have some particular way of tackling this issue. I just look at Alaska's relations with the federal government this way. We fought very hard for statehood. We thought we were getting more in the way of self-determination with statehood. At the time of the statehood, Alaskans voted for it after the Secretary of Interior ran around the state and said, "We will be partners with you and the federal government in your development." The federal government has shown that it is not very effective at development. Just look at the roadless rule in Southeast Alaska. You know, we had a timber industry that employed thousands of people, and now we have a fight in the courts over a roadless rule that literally has hit us where it's very hard to build hydro, it's very hard to build geothermal, it's very hard to do even small timber projects, and it's very hard to get mining projects started. And that's a federal rule that was put in place without a whole lot of consideration by Alaskans, and it's hurting us. I'll take a different example, King Cove Cold Bay Road. We're looking not for a superhighway, we're looking for a cow path. And this is to save lives. I know a family who lost, a woman actually works here in town, lost her sister, who was a medevac nurse trying to save lives in King Cove. And here you're making that decision far away in Washington, D.C., without any cognizance of the needs of the people who live here. The National Petroleum Reserve, which is essential to helping to fill the Alaska pipeline, it was cut in half by an administrative order, essentially President Obama's pen in 2012. And Alaskans, like many other Westerners, are fed up with federal management of the lands that doesn't take care of the environment, doesn't take care of development, doesn't do anything. And what I've said is I want to see something radically different. I can go be your senator, and sure, like everybody else, I can pick up the phone and call a cabinet member and say, let's try to change this decision. But the real problem we have is that we should be making these decisions ourselves. And so in a long talk at the university last fall, we kind of laid out a set of options. There are several different bills pending in Congress right now to turn land over to the states. We have a bill that is passed the House of Representatives to create more Forest Service land, put that in Oregon and California. In Alaska, we've asked for Forest Service land to help build a state forest that would be sustainable for a timber industry. Don Young has a bill, Senator Inhofe has a bill that would give development rights on federal land to the states. I've argued that these thick phone book size plans that each of these federal managers do need to have a sign off from the state before they move forward. And you know, this is not pie in the sky, and I'll just tell you why. Go right next door to the Yukon. The Yukon got control of its crown land, its nationally owned land, from the national government of Canada in the last decade. The Northwest Territories got it on April 1st of this year. Even Greenland, with just 60,000 people, got control of its land. And I believe it's time for Alaska to ask for more than the 100 million acres that we got at statehood so that we can develop the state and protect our environment and do it in a way where we can offer certainty with investors, because it's very, very hard to do that right now the way the federal government behaves.
Now, you spoke about the Yukon, that issue. They just had an issue with that cutting down old timber for the bunch of non-use phone books we get here. What happens is people don't realize we're not going to, the people of Alaska individually are not going to realize the profit from these ventures. What happens is big business, yeah, they open it up, but I don't personally benefit. Unless I get a job there, maybe for a short-term job, basically it's going to be the same folks that always benefit, and that is the main investors. And see, people in Alaska are not realizing that, hey, all of these folks that are coming here with these ideas now, they are not for the benefit of Alaska. They have a monetary, you know, benefit to themselves. And folks need to pay attention to these things, but they don't. They hear what folks preach to them, and they don't even go to do any research to try to get the correct information.
All right, Thomas. And, Thomas.
You know.
Yep.
Thomas, go to our website at treadwellalaska.com. Send me a note. I'd love to talk with you more about this. 444-1231 is our campaign number. I'd be happy to talk this through with you.
Well, it's NACNEC is calling now, and we'll get to that in a second, but I want to press you with just a little bit on the federal overreach thing. When Senator Mark Begich, who you're seeking to replace in the Senate, replaced Ted Stevens in a very difficult election.
Yep.
And Ted Stevens had been in there for a very long time and had a very firm position on what Alaska was entitled to from the federal government. And I take it that you're kind of going down the Ted Stevens route on this. But one thing that Ted Stevens really was about is federal spending in Alaska. Now, I kind of heard in that last question from Thomas is, how can you be talking about federal overreach when we're so dependent on federal dollars?
Well, and one of the things that make us dependent on federal dollars is federal overreach. And I'll just use Southeast Alaska again as an example. Okay, here I was down in Southeast about 10 days ago, and Mark Begich was in the paper talking about what he'd done in payments in lieu of taxes to communities in Southeast Alaska that helps keep the schools going, helps keep basic services going. Now, that's coming from the Forest Service. The Forest Service tried to sequester that out. The governor said he'd have none of that, and I support that. But what we said to them is, if you want us to support ourselves, why don't you cut some trees? Why don't you make this forest more productive? Why don't we put more people to work? And, you know, they're saying they can't afford that. That's because they're not getting revenue from that land. Now, here in the state, I had a Coast Guard admiral who's now the new commandant of the Coast Guard say to me at one point, you know, it's very hard to give the same level of services in Alaska as they are in the rest of the country. And I said, Admiral, you know, California is a relatively recent acquisition of the United States. Why should they get any more protection of their coastline than we get? And my point very seriously is this, is that we certainly have to stand up for equal treatment with that. But the idea that you're sending a senator with a gunny sack to bring home money is not my idea. My idea is send a senator with a crowbar to pry power back from Washington, put it in the hands of people, let us determine our future, let us determine what works economically, and we will build a great place in the nation, a great part of our nation for the world. That's where I come from, Steve.
Let's go to Alan, joins the program from Alvin, sorry, from Naknek. Welcome to Talk of Alaska with me, Treadwell.
Hi, Alvin.
Yeah, hi. Hey, you said you worked with Egan and Hickel. Did you work with them when they put in the permit system for fishing?
I didn't. I was in Governor Hickel's cabinet in the first part of the 1990s, and during the first 7 or 8 years of the 1980s, I worked with both Governor Egan and Governor Hickel as they were trying to find a way to get our natural gas to market. And Bill Egan and Governor Hickel were the co-founders of Yukon Pacific Corporation. So that's when I worked with them.
I'm talking about the permit system in Bristol Bay for fishing.
Limited entry, yeah.
Yeah, actually, limited entry basically came in during the Hammond administration, but it's been implemented ever since, and so it was implemented under...
No, I think you got it wrong there. I think it was implemented in the Egan administration. I'm not positive, but... Yeah. See, to me, that's when it started.
And then it was,
And then it carried over into the Hammond administration.
Yeah, it was a court.
Yeah, but the question is...
Sure. I was thinking about the constitutional amendment.
When they went to the permit system, all the local people and that used to come from Iliamna and that fished with their families, they were eliminated out of the fishery altogether. And most of the permits went to the outside fishermen since... The old-timers are the ones that fished here in the sailboat days. And I think by going to the permit system, that's really hurt the local people here. And not only that, then they went into, the native land claims, the young people got hurt again. After 1951, they weren't included. So they got a double whammy, the young kids today, and... what they need is a lot of help in vocational training or college. You know, they need all the help they can get. And the people that had those permits now, they're the ones that should be helping them out, because not only do they have permits, now they want quotas. They're just hogging everything up here.
Well, Alvin, I guess what I'd like to say is this, is that when we talk about bringing power home and making the right things work. You mentioned the sailboat days in Bristol Bay. For those who don't understand that, for a long time, the way we managed our fish was we told our fishermen they could only fish with sailboats. And in fact, in the late 1930s, Japan came right into Bristol Bay and with mechanized boats, and they started taking all our fish. And that was the beginning of the fight for the 200-mile limit here in Alaska. And I'm glad we got the 200-mile limit. I got to see the end of it in 1976 when we actually did it. We have the situation of limited entry, and the question of limited entry was everybody who had been in the fishery was grandfathered, but then you had the right to sell your permits, and some people did sell their permits to outsiders. And we came back to try to address that with the community development quota in the early 1990s, where we took a share of the offshore fisheries and said that's to be owned by the coastal communities that that have the fishing happening right next to them. And I was involved in that fight. So some part of that quota there is used to help our communities. The one thing I'll say is this, is that the Magnuson-Stevens Act is coming up for renewal. I asked my opponents about that in the debate the other night, and Commissioner Sullivan didn't have much to say about it. We have to make sure that we still have regional control of our fisheries, that that doesn't move away to Washington. We have to encourage and make sure that the council, when they make their allocation decisions, that they respect the coastal communities that we've got, because fishing is what powers our coastal communities. And when it comes to ways to get more permits back home to the people who live there, Alvin, I'm with you, and the state has some loan programs. There are ways that you can work with your community to do that. The CDQ groups can also work in that area, because I believe these fish for Alaskans, you know, this is our livelihood for a long time to come. And it would be just awful, in my opinion, if the Republican Party put forward a nominee that is not experienced and doesn't have the depth in the fishing industry to try to fight for Alaskans. So that's where I come from. Thanks for your question.
Okay, thank you.
All right, Alvin, thanks for your call as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from this APRN member station. The Medallion Foundation and the Federal Aviation Administration set standards for the operation of aircraft and airports and provide services to the flying public. Passengers are influential in making flying safer in Alaska. When passengers know their rights and responsibilities, aviation is safer for everyone. Safety information online at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
It's Talk of Alaska, and our guest is Meade Treadwell, standing for election to the U.S. Senate. He needs to get the Republican nomination, and he's up in the primary election. Two other candidates as well, who will also be appearing on Talk of Alaska in future weeks. But right now it's Meade Treadwell, and I think we're going to have to step it up here a little bit to more of a lightning round.
All right, I'll have shorter answers, and you can have tougher questions.
You appeal, go right ahead. You appear on the ballot at the same time that a referendum appears on Senate Bill 21, as it's called, the state's current oil tax structure. And so, you know, there's going to be people going to the polls drawn by that issue on both sides.
Sure.
You're kind of on one side here, aren't you?
Well, as Lieutenant Governor, I won't endorse one side or the other of the repeal. I won't take a position on the initiatives that are on the fall ballot either. But I will tell you the history. And I was for fixing ACEs before the governor, before the then Attorney General Dan Sullivan. And it simply comes down to the word competitive, Steve. We have to attract over $100 billion in our oil patch right now to get a gas pipeline going, to make that Shell offshore development work, to make NPRA work, to get the heavy and viscous oil out of Prudhoe Bay. That's a lot of money that we have to win in boardrooms around the world to put Alaskans to work and to keep that pipeline flowing. ACES was written on the premise that $100 was a high oil price. It ended up to be a normal oil price. And so we had a much more confiscatory tax number over $100 a barrel. And that wasn't for oil that was just going to come anyway. That was for oil that we have to get investment to produce. So I worked hard to make sure that we have a more competitive tax system. And I'll just tell you this. There's 1,000 different ways that bill could have been written. There's lots of good arguments between the, you know, getting the best of the present and attracting the future. The bill that came through was a bill, a way to do it, We supported some sort of change from ACEs, and that's what we got. Now it's up to the voters. But I was for changing ACEs. It was not helping us well in competition around the world.
Let's go to Sylvia, joins the program from Anchorage. Welcome to Talk of Alaska with Mead Treadwell.
Thank you for taking my call.
Yes.
Senator Ted Stevens, Uncle Ted, was strongly against the Pebble Mine. Senator Mark Begich is against the Pebble Mine. And the large majority of the Alaska citizenship is against Pebble Mine. I'd like to get a straight answer. So many people give wishy-washy answers where you still don't know what they think. And I'd like a straight answer on whether you support Pebble Mine.
I support Pebble Mine going through its permits, Sylvia. I don't believe in pulling the rug out from under them. Pebble Mine's on state land that we got as part of our statehood land selection. And we put it open for exploration, and dang, somebody found $500 billion worth of resources there. Now, the position that I took and the governor took at the time we ran for office is we're not going to replace one resource with another. And if the permitting process shows that you can't protect the fish and do the mine won't happen. But the idea of ground ruling it out, taking away your land and the value on your land without an appropriate public process, to me is wrong. So whether you're for it or against it, I hope you would support a process that allows the science to go forward. And that's where I come from.
Okay, thank you. You've pretty well answered my question, and I am very much against the Pebble Mine. I feel like it's a disaster waiting to happen if it goes through, but thank you.
Yeah, and God bless you, and there is a process, and there's going to be a way to be involved, but the way of just pulling the rug out mm-hmm. is going to hurt many, many other different projects around the state and around the country, and that's why the state's been fighting that.
How do you feel about the EPA's involvement?
Well, you know, the EPA administers the Clean Water Act, and they actually transferred administration of the Clean Water Act to the state. And then they used this obscure, never-been-used portion, the 404C, to say let's maybe veto it ahead of permits. And I don't think that's what that part of the law was there for. And I think that's been overused, frankly. And I think we have to stand up to EPA's overreach in this area. And if you read their own report, even though they might go ahead with this veto that they've talked about, you read their own report, they talk about dozens and dozens of questions that would be handled in the permitting process. So I'll just go back to my position. We should not replace our fish with minerals in terms of what it is in our economy. The fish, we have to protect the fish of Bristol Bay, and I am very much for that. But the idea of ground ruling a mine out that you and I own without a scientific process, to me, makes no sense.
Right. And again, with Senator Stevens, he was not against mining, but he was against the Pebble Mine. But I will leave it at that, and I thank you very much.
Well, that's a good follow-up there, Sylvia. Nice job on that. Let's go to Adam, joins the program from Sitka. Welcome to Talk of Alaska with me, Treadwell, Adam.
Yeah, hello. Thanks for taking my call. Mr. Treadwell, my question, I live in southeast Alaska here, and I've heard you mention a couple times the reinvigorating the timber industry here.
Sure.
And, you know, my main question is, right now timber is only about 200 jobs in the timber industry in the southeast, whereas tourism and fishing are about 10,000 jobs and 8,000 jobs, respectively, and they're each about $1 billion into the southeast economy. So we've seen from the past that logged-out streams don't produce fish, and no one pays to come to Alaska to see clear cuts. So those industries really stand in direct opposition. So, how do you come down the line of sacrificing the timber industry or sacrificing those industries for reinvigorating that timber industry?
No, absolutely not. And Adam, would you have no timber cutting at all in Southeast? Is that your general view, or what do you think the size of the timber industry should be?
Well, I think a gentleman had called earlier, and he mentioned, you know, most of the big timber contracts, Alaskans never realize any of that funding. I think that what I would push for, and I think most folks would push for, is small local mills. But that's not really, you know, that's all going to be on second growth land that's already been cut once, and now we're, you know, going back in with small sales and pulling out those already pre-damaged lands that don't apply to the roadless rule.
Well, let me just put it this way. I think the roadless rule is a problem because it limits our flexibility on everything, not just timber, but on mining. We've got some good mining prospects that have got You know, they won't hurt the environment as I understand them. You've got geothermal and hydro prospects that you need to have some roads to be able to do. So I think the roadless rule is an arbitrary rule that the Tongass should be carved out as an exception, and I believe that's where we're going to get through the courts. When you talk about the fishing industry in Southeast Alaska, I am very bullish on the fishing industry, and we've got some challenges. It's why we have to work with native co-managers on sea otters, for example. It's also why we have to work very closely with the researchers and others on the prospects for building out the shellfish mariculture industry. There's tremendous opportunity there, and I'm for value added when it comes to our timber, when it comes to our natural resources in general. I'm for seeing Alaskans get the jobs, not just from harvesting or getting the resources, but actually processing the resources. And there's a lot of great success stories that I've seen. I've traveled with the Seafood Marketing Institute, and we see people who go from the fishing boat right to a restaurant table somewhere else outside the state. That's very exciting. So I'm very bullish on Southeast Alaska's other opportunities. Want to make sure there's good inexpensive power and a good transportation system. But to write off the timber industry and just say it can't happen, to me, doesn't make sense. I think that we can have a sustainable timber industry with a somewhat larger cut than we've got. More and more second growth is going to be possible as we go through the years, and you already see areas coming up on Prince of Wales Island that you have that opportunity. And I just don't think the Forest Service has figured out how to cut that knot after the mills were shut down in the 1990s.
All right. Well, I appreciate that perspective. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right, Adam. I don't think you got his vote there, Mead.
Hey, you know, Adam, 444-1231, give me a call after the show.
Let's go to Bob, joins the program from Fairbanks. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Bob, with Mead Treadwell.
Thank you. Hi, Mead.
Hey.
This is a political season, so I'd just like to know a few things. One is, what's your unique qualification to be U.S. Senator? To me, a U.S. Senator is a big deal, and it's more than, as you say, taking a gunny sack back home. Are you just another government lawyer, or do you have some unique qualifications we should know about?
Well, thanks for asking the question. I came to Alaska 40 years ago, and I've worked all over the state. I've worked in our coastal communities. I've worked on interior issues. I've worked on Arctic issues. And I've worked very hard on rural issues in terms of helping to get rural sanitation improved and getting the honey buckets out of people's homes and replace it with flush plumbing. So I think I would go representing Alaska, knowing Alaska. That's number one. Number two is I go with a perspective that we have to get limits back in government. We have to stand up for our liberty, and we have to stand up for the self-determination that we got. But these are not just words. I'm a conservative with a record, and I have been working on these issues for some time. I helped get the Alaska Railroad owned by the state. I helped get some of the exceptions in Anilka so that Alaskans have access to their land. And Ted Stevens worked on that and said to me before he died, you know, what was permissive before now requires permits. And I don't think that's what the big compromise in 1980 was all about. I want to see Alaskans have the chance to make their decisions here at home. And that's why I'm running for the Senate. And I bring with me a huge amount of experience working on Alaska issues locally, statewide, nationally, internationally. And I want to see you, Bob, and your children, your grandchildren, have the chance to enjoy this state the way I have, with some greater capability of self-determination, because I believe we're going to compete very well in the world if we educate our kids right, and we're going to have a great economy.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, Bob. You know, Ted Stevens, Mead Treadwell, Ted Stevens used to come back and regularly lecture the state legislature, say, you need to fix this subsistence thing. You know, you're going to pay a terrible price if you let it go to dual management. Guess what?
I was there during some of those special sessions.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they haven't. It's now whatever. You can say, oh, well, we need to fix the federal law. I don't know. What are you going to say about how we're going to deal with this subsistence thing? I don't think people realize the implications as time goes on. But right now, we have a situation on the lower Yukon River,
mm-hmm.
where it's running through federal land, and the federal government's saying, no, this is our waters. We're managing these waters. And the state is not.
And Steve,
it doesn't like it, but it's nothing it can do about it.
Steve, where I've been pushing with the federal government as lieutenant governor, and where I've been pushing within the state government as lieutenant governor, is to make sure that we understand what's happening so we can manage for abundance. And that, to me, means start right there in the field. I spoke to the tribal leaders in Bethel last summer and the summer before that about how do we get more local management in our fisheries, people who've grown up there who understand the rivers, and that's very important. I've talked to federal managers, the head of NOAA now, Kathy Sullivan. I met her and worked with her when she was an astronaut, and I very much believe that NOAA should be helping us with this. The reason why I'm pressing on the Russians right now on bycatch is because it's not just what we're doing with our trawlers offshore. It's what they're doing with their trawlers offshore that may affect us. I've supported the Alaska Moose Federation. I know that doesn't make everybody happy, but the point is this, is that they've been working very, very hard to get more moose habitat and more moose out to their areas so that we can manage intensively on state and native lands and on federal lands to have more wildlife available. And if you look at what happens in other countries, it's possible. So, you know, first and foremost, let's work for abundance seriously and be absolutely serious about it. Second, and I said this to the the Congress of American Indians that was meeting here about 2 weeks ago, Commissioner Sullivan and I both talked to the group, and I said, we have to work very hard as Alaskans to try to solve our problems here locally, rather than going to Washington to solve all of our problems. And so much sometimes somebody's saying, well, I've got an edge or I can whack somebody else here in Alaska on the head. And whether it's issues like bypass mail, whether it's issues like subsistence, whether it's issues like roads, whether it's issues like the Pebble Mine, I want Alaskans to work together. And so I agree with what Ted Stevens said, is that we've got to work together to solve these problems ourselves, because we may not be happy with the federal solution that's foisted upon us.
So I didn't quite hear an answer on subsistence.
The answer on subsistence is that the law is what it is in Anilka right now that says the federal government takes over in time of shortage. And the best way for the state to do this is, one, work out ways to respect rural needs, which I believe we have done many different ways. And second, to manage for abundance and make sure that the federal government is helping on that as well as standing ready to take over in different areas. Shortage does not help us.
I think you're saying I would not come back and wag my finger at the state legislature like Ted Stevens did.
I would come back and wag my finger at the state legislature like I do now that says, what are you doing to help abundance? I mean, you know, there were a few legislators who foresaw what happened on the Kuskokwim, what was happening on the Yukon, and we had to have a state response, and we've had it. And I'm very proud of the fact that the governor put forward that money. We're running some theories to ground, and that's one reason why I've been pushing on the bycatch issue.
It's Mead Treadwell, our guest. He's running for the U.S. Senate, as you probably know, and you've got a few more minutes on Talk of Alaska as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from this APRN member station. If you've served in the military, the Alaska VA welcomes you home and thanks you for your service. We encourage you to enroll for VA health care benefits. Go to 1010ez.med.va.gov to apply online in less than 5 minutes, or print, fax, or mail the 2-page form to the VA. You do not need your DD-214 to apply. Call 257-3323 for questions. This message is sponsored by the VA.
It's Talk of Alaska. Mead Treadwell is our guest, and John joins the program from Fairbanks. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, John.
This is John David Reagan. I'm a member of Labor's Union Local 942 here in Fairbanks. And Lieutenant Governor, I would like to ask you two specific questions, and I'd really appreciate a yes or no answer just to know where you stand on these issues. And the two questions are these. If it came to a vote as U.S. Senator, as a Republican Senator, would you vote to repeal Davis-Bacon? And second question is, will you vote as a Republican Senator to raise the minimum wage?
On the minimum wage issue, that's an issue pending on the ballot here locally. Nationally, I believe it is a states' rights issue for states to decide what fits in their area. So the answer is no on the minimum wage issue. On the Davis-Bacon issue, I believe that the premise of Davis-Bacon is that the prevailing wage should be paid. I question sometimes how we get to the prevailing wage issue, and I'm not sure Davis-Bacon has done as well as it can be to help us be competitive in building infrastructure in our state.
Follow-up question. Would you vote, if it came to a vote, would you vote to maintain union scale as the prevailing wage?
I think we need to talk about that. What fits in one community may not fit exactly in another community.
So you would not vote to maintain union scale as the minimum wage?
I'd say there's some more information, John, that we've got to get to. I believe that Alaska is a high wage state where we need high wages to meet the high cost of living around here. And I have supported project labor agreements, a number of other things that I've worked with the labor community on training. I'm just not sure Davis-Bacon is working exactly the way it's intended to work.
Governor, you're evading the question.
No, I'm not evading the question, sir. I'm telling you that a yes or no answer isn't the answer that always works, sir. You know?
Would you vote to maintain union scale as the prevailing wage under Davis-Bacon?
I honestly don't know if I would or not. That's the answer. I don't know.
John, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thanks for that union question.
Sure. No, I mean, you know, it's very important that Alaskans get paid a living wage, and I think that's important with projects. There's some things with Davis-Bacon nationally, with Little Davis-Bacon here, where we're spending much more for projects than we may need to be spending, and people who are willing to do the jobs for a fair wage aren't getting the jobs. So there you go.
Okay, let's say that you get the nomination. Let's say that you beat Mark Begich. Let's say that you end up going to Washington as a U.S. Senator, Senator Mead Treadwell of Alaska, a Republican. And let's say the Republicans are in charge of the Senate.
Uh-huh.
What's your number one, number two, number three priority?
Well, number one is to elect a majority leadership that helps our state and helps our nation. I believe that it would be very good to see Senator Lisa Murkowski in as chair of the Senate Energy Committee. I believe it would be very good to see a Senate leadership that works with the House of Representatives so we don't see these forced government shutdowns or these budgets that are really just continuing resolutions where the democratic principles have not been applied in the budget. And that means electing a leadership, and I'm not going to name names because I don't know who's running. But people who are doing that, who are serious, deadly serious about protecting our liberties, following the constitutional process on the budget, following the constitutional process on the laws. Then I will tell you what are my priorities as an Alaskan are basically to get that pipeline full, to bring power and decision-making home, to join those in other Western states and now, states like Wisconsin, states in the South who believe that federal land ought to go back to the states. And I want to work on those issues as we work to do things to keep the pipeline open. On the issue of repealing Obamacare, on the issue of fixing the VA, on the issue of health care in general, I believe that, I lost my wife to cancer. I believe that federal research and development does a whole lot for health in our community. But I believe we've set up an incentive system now to make people more dependent on government. And I think that's wrong. I think we have to be less dependent on government. And Obamacare is a war on the young in terms of priorities where people have to choose between their retirement and buying a house and paying higher costs for insurance. And I think we've got to address that very, very quickly.
Thank you. Very good. Clear definition of the three top priorities. Let's go to Cam joins the program from Fairbanks. Cam, you're on the air with Mead Treadwell.
Thank you, Lieutenant Governor. Congress is full of people that have spent their entire life in government service, in government payroll. And I just think we need people there that have had maybe some business experience that, although government is not a business, it should still find the most efficient and effective solution to its problems. Could you answer or
thank you
to that?
Thank you. You know, how many people here are listening to this program? Raise your hand if you've ever seen our government stuck on stupid. And I can tell you I've seen it stuck on stupid, from the point of view of being in government. I've seen it from the other side of being regulated by government or being taxed by government and seeing the wrong kind of incentives to make our economy strong and to make our nation strong. I would bring a business background, and I've started businesses, you know, technology businesses in global markets, Alaska businesses that serve Alaskans in global markets. And it really helps to have that background to because if you're going to go represent people and you want this economy to be productive, it helps to understand what taxes really do to people who are trying to foster investment and make jobs. It's helped people understand why regulations sometimes work for the big companies but not for the small companies. You know, there's all the other candidates have gotten their money off, Sullivan and Begich have gotten most of their money off places like Wall Street. I'm happier to get my money off Main Street and to help Main Street be strong and productive. And that's where I'm coming from. And I will bring that business sense and one other thing I'll just say is that we ask our government to do a lot of things. The first role of government is to protect our freedom. And then we also want to have clean streets, and we want to have safe water, and we want to have a Coast Guard, and we want to have a fire department. And those are all very, very important and incredibly important things. But it is not their job to take away our freedom. It's our job to protect our freedom. And what I think you'll find is that when government is in the service business, one, we can't be vain and think we can do everything. Two, we can't be creating more dependence. And three, a lot of this stuff can happen much better at the state level or, in some cases, privatization. I when I got to DEC in the Hickel administration, Steve, it was an interesting story. The way that they approved subdivisions in this state meant that there was a huge backlog, and most of the people who live in homes in the valley today are on lands that were subdivided in the late 80s, early 90s. We took that out of government's hands and said, you can go to an engineer, and the engineer can do this, and you don't have to wait months for somebody from DEC to show up. The first people to complain were the big banks, and they said, well, we can't sell the mortgages to the big banks outside unless the government does this.
Oh,
and
glory be. Why? We couldn't have that now, could we?
Yeah. And so anyway, I worked through the process to privatize a function of government, made it more efficient for people. We still protected the environment. Government's smaller, and it's more efficient. And I believe we can do that lots of places. We've got over 500 agencies in our national government. And go there determined to see efficiency and make sure taxpayers get their money worth.
Well, you've sufficiently filibustered that I almost don't have time to ask you about gay marriage, but I will.
I support our Constitution. Marriage is between a man and a woman, and I believe this is an issue to be decided by states.
Supreme Court's already saying, you know, First Amendment.
We'll see what else the courts have to say, but I believe that... we in Alaska have made a choice, and right now I'm sticking with Alaskans on their choice.
Thank you for being with
us.
And
I say right now, that's where I intend to stay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. And TreadwellAlaska.com, if people want to join us, I'll be unabashed. We're the underdog in this race.
Thank you. Meet Treadwell. Next week, Dan Sullivan. Thank you very much. Josh Edge, Dave Waldron, Joaquin Palomino, Sean Carpenter. I'm Steve Heimel.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to helping people reach their goals on and off the field. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far. Attention, Alaska gardeners. Invasive weeds are a threat to landscaping, lawns, and gardens. They can spread and harm Alaska wildlife and waterways. Potted plants, hay, gravel, and soil, even clothing and vehicles can transport invasive plants to Alaska. To learn more at alaskainvasives.org. Let's protect Alaska together. Visit alaskainvasives.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Division of Agriculture and the U.S. Forest Service. This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.